Discuss, challenge, inform, comment, viewpoint on Talk Radio Europe.
Giles Brown.
Live comment and discussion with studio guests. Viewpoint.
You're listening to Viewpoint, Talk Radio Europe's current affairs show with a panel of invited guests where we discuss the issues of the day. Live until 12 o'clock, joining me in the studio, Rex Leyland. Good morning to you, Rex.
Good morning, Giles. Good morning, Spain.
Good to have you with us. And the lovely Rosalind Scott-Gibb. Good morning, Rosalind.
Good morning, Giles. Good morning, everyone.
952-78-4000 is the phone number. Studio at talkradioeurope.com is the email, and the Facebook page is Talk Radio Europe Official. We're going to be speaking today about a new report into British people's life expectancy. Brits are no longer living as long as they were supposed to be. Are we really living healthy lives? Looking for your comments on that. Also, the row in the UK as an old photograph of a British bake-off TV presenter in a Nazi outfit makes the front page. Is this really news? Again, looking forward to hearing your thoughts. The UK flouting its duty to protect citizens from air pollution, as well as we come to the end of another summer that is mainly remembered for the photograph social media posts of drunken British tourists falling over all over Spain, and several town halls announcing they're setting up task forces to deal with the problem. We'll be asking you to give us all your thoughts on the matter and how we deal with it. 952-78-4000 is the phone number, studio at talkradioeurope.com, the email, and the Facebook page, should you wish to leave a post, is Talk Radio Europe Official. But the main story that has been dominating the news over the past 7 days is Hurricane Irma, and we go right live to Miami, where Nathan Thomas is waiting on the line. Good morning, Nathan.
Good morning, Giles, and it's very nice to be talking to you. We weren't sure we were going to be able to make this connection today. We've weathered the storm here in Miami, not nearly as badly as we were afraid it might be, but it still was pretty bad here. I've just gotten electricity back in the past couple of hours, and internet even more recently. So all I've seen in the past couple of days is pretty much what I could see out the window of my building here. But I've just been seeing a little bit of what's been on TV from other places, and it is truly an amazing storm. The size of it, the amount of rain, the amount of wind and so on, and the damage it's done. At this point, they say in Florida there are about 6 million people without electricity, about 8 million if you include Georgia and North and South Carolina, where the storm is hitting right now. It's been an amazing week leading up to this. If you remember a week ago when we ended the show, we were sitting kind of in what they thought would be the path of the storm. And that went back and forth for a number of days toward the end of last week until the governor of Florida finally started ordering evacuations from most of South Florida. The thing that is so strange about this storm is the size of it. It was about 200 miles across, and Florida itself at its widest point is only about 160 miles across. So no matter where it hit, almost everybody was going to get that hurricane to some degree or another. And we spent days watching it as it tore through the Caribbean and Cuba and the Keys, the Florida Keys, which were the first place hit and hit the hardest. Then it moved up more on the West Coast, so we got it a little lighter than we were afraid in Miami. But it really, even here, the number of people who did leave. I mean, they had mandatory evacuations, supposedly, and they think, several million people left from, different parts of Florida, from just the county I'm in. They said it was about 600,000, but they only had shelters for about 100,000, and they filled up much faster than they thought, because this time, unlike other hurricanes, people took it a lot more seriously. For days, grocery stores and so on were out of water. You couldn't get plywood at the hardware stores. Gasoline lines were for hours as people prepared to get out of town and board up their houses before they left, or else stay in their houses as they decided to stay and not evacuate. The mandatory evacuation that they called for, really nobody was going around telling people or forcing people to leave. Police would drive through neighborhoods and warn them of an evacuation order. But if you didn't want to go, what they said, the penalty basically would be that if you called for help after the winds were blowing more than 35 miles an hour, no one was going to come and get you. So if you wanted to take that into your own hands, that was up to you.
Nathan, Rex got a question for you. One second, Rex.
Morning, Nathan.
Good morning.
It's nice to hear your sultry tones, even though nature was strongly against you.
Yes.
In fact, you've just sort of answered my question, because I was wondering whether or not what would be the consequences if you flatly refuse, albeit it's mandatory to leave, you flatly refuse, what do you sort of forfeit by not leaving?
I said what it is you forfeit the idea of somebody coming to rescue you if later, once the storm hits, that you decide, oh, I want to get out. Well, that's your problem then. Again, like I said, there was no forcing people to leave or anything. They just realize, and having gone through hurricanes for years here, of lesser size than this one, they realize that if you don't have a lot of people there to deal with, you have fewer problems. And the big problem is so many people here are living in one-story houses. They were talking about flood surges along the coast and along the barrier islands, of which Miami Beach is really part of that. If you get a 5 or 6 or 8 foot flood surge and you're living in a one-story house, you don't really have any place to go except maybe the roof. And how long can you stay on the roof? And that's when people need rescuing. So those are the people they really wanted to get out. If you were in a building that was, you know, a solid cement structure, and felt you were safe there and had food and water to last you 3 or 4 days, and decided, as we did, that, you know, there wasn't going to be a reason to try to call and get somebody to rescue you at the last minute, then, you know, really the authorities are perfectly happy to have you stay, because they realize that there is no way to evacuate, you know, the millions of people that are in southern Florida. Especially when they started the evacuations, we thought it was going to hit square on Miami, and so people started evacuating to the west. Then as the storm, before it got here, started moving, and the predictions were that it was going to be more on the western side of Florida, those people then had to start coming back here or trying to head north. But everybody knew the storm was going to go north and it was going to cover the whole state. So if you evacuate, where do you go? I mean, it was finding a solid place somewhere.
Nathan, did you not think at any point of evacuating?
Well, you think of it because they talk about it, but then we decided that we were probably and hopefully would be better off. We're in a very solid building. Now, we understood that, you know, it's possible the windows could have been blown out by the high winds. We're high enough on a floor that it was unlikely that, you know, tree branches or something like that were going to go through the windows, but just the force of the winds, and we were hit by gusts of over 100 miles an hour. That could have popped the windows, and that would have made it tough. It would have made it impossible to stay in the apartments. But then you go back to the hallway in the building and close the doors, and you're, you know, more than reasonably safe there, or down in the stairwells. And as long as you've got food and water, you know, you are probably as well off as any place else, because it's a big cement building.
Rex.
Of course, the other thing about Florida is there are an awful lot of senior citizens, and they can't be moved from their various sheltered accommodations, causing even more grief for the services, for the public services.
Well, that's true, and some hospitals were closed. Some places where people were, you know, in much more care than others were moved. They were evacuated. Some shelters were set up for people with special needs that needed oxygen and so on. But in our building here, there are a number of elderly people, and we, you know, there was one woman who was 85 years old and spends most of her time on oxygen. She decided to stay. The building does have a generator that you know, keeps the lights in the halls on and so on. It's a minimal thing, but we were able to tap onto that and be able to plug in the oxygen machine. So, you know, again, those decisions are made. And if the alternative is to go and spend your time in a high school gymnasium with 800 other people, you know, that is the option, unless you have somewhere friends to drive to and everything. But anybody within 100 miles or several hundred miles all the way up through Florida had as much chance as you of being hit just as hard. I mean, if you went to a friend who happened to live in a one-story house, the chance of them getting flooded or their roof blown off and you had nowhere to go at that point, if you're in a, you know, a multi-story building and can at least, if the water gets high, go upstairs.
And there was some concern about those, you know, those construction machines that are very high.
The cranes.
blowing off and flying through a window or something. That's what I would have been worried about in the high-story apartment buildings. But that didn't concern you, I guess, or you felt it was worth taking a chance.
Well, we didn't have any cranes near us. There is one on the island that we live on, one or two, but they got those down in time, took all the horizontal things off it, so you just had one standing pole, which was, you know, no more dangerous than anything else. The big cranes, and there are some in some sections of Miami, one did topple over and didn't injure anybody, but those cranes are... The problem was, by the time it was decided that the evacuation was necessary, to take the horizontal parts off those cranes takes 5 or 6 days. And they didn't have 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 days to dismantle them. But those cranes are built to work like weather vanes. As the wind pushes them, they will, you know, straighten themselves out in the direction of the wind and have as little resistance as possible. So the chances of them coming down are reduced. I mean, as I said, one in Miami did come down. It didn't hurt anybody. One of the biggest problems, construction sites. A lot of these buildings that are 20, 30, 40 stories high that are partially built, and a lot of the materials are up on the upper stories, and there were some reports in some of these buildings of pieces of wallboard, of glass doors and so on falling down, blowing off these buildings. And I mean, that created a bunch of problems in one or two places. And of course, in the middle of all of this, there were reports of looters, people breaking into to a Foot Locker store and running off with sneakers. Now, they happened to do that. And I mean, this is the one case we know of, because there happened to be a television crew who was waiting out the storm and reporting from right across the street. So they had video of the entire break-in. They passed that on to the police, and the police have said that all of the people involved in the looting have been arrested.
I mean, this is always going to happen during a sort of crisis like this. That brings us on to the point of how did the local population react to the coming storm? We've heard about public shelters. Did you see any evidence of emergency buying? We were getting reports of fights breaking out in supermarkets. Was there very much, as the Brits refer to, as the Blitz spirit and all pulling together in the shelters that you saw?
Well, I haven't seen anything in the shelters because, of course, I didn't go to any, and we didn't have television to see, you know, what was on local television about them. The panic buying certainly did happen, but this was happening it started like last Wednesday, and you'd go to a grocery store and the shelves where the water was, the bottled water was, they were all empty, and they would get, you know, these huge truckloads of bottled water would arrive in the stores, and they'd say, well, we're expecting a delivery at 10 o'clock at night. You'd have a couple of hundred people standing in line hoping to get, you know, a case or something of bottled water. But by Thursday and Friday, it was more available because people went out Wednesday, which I think was the first day that they really talked seriously about this being a really big one. So you'd have waves of panic buying. I mean, on Wednesday, you could be lined up at a gas station for hours to try to get gas. By Thursday evening, I was able to go out and fill up the car, and no one was in line at all. Now, Friday, again, more people were back, but it kind of goes in waves. But people would stand in line for hours to get a couple of sheets of plywood to put over the windows of their house. Miami Beach, they were filling sandbags. The communities would pass out sandbags to people who wanted them, and you'd be on the beach and you'd fill your own sandbags and take them away and try to, you know, fortify your house as much as you could.
Do you think lessons have been learned, Nathan, as a result of this enormous storm, in that next time, God forbid, there is another one of the same magnitude? Do you think, though, that perhaps the preparations will have been refined for the next time?
The preparations here have been refined every year, sometimes twice a year. I mean, people here just kind of know it's going to happen. You know what to do. You go out, you get the water, you do this, the shelter's open. You either go to a shelter or you have stayed in your home before and you think it's safe, so you stay there. Or you drive to a friend in some other town, or you drive out of what you think is going to be the path of the hurricane, which in this one, again, this one is so unusual because it is so big and was so powerful that it covers the whole state. There was really nowhere that you could go with any certainty at all and assume that you were out of the path of the storm.
What was the most northern part did the storm reach? For example, my brother lives in Stewart, which is north of West Palm Beach. Did the storm get as far as Stewart? I mean, I've not heard from him.
As far as everything.
I heard him before, but
it's now in Georgia and South Carolina. It has covered the entire state of Florida.
Nathan, just a quick question.
Atlanta Airport, which is the largest, the busiest in the U.S., has canceled 11,000 or 1,100 flights for tomorrow because it is hitting there. Not nearly as strongly as here, but enough to disrupt everything. There is flooding in North and South Carolina.
And I mean, how did you actually get news, Nathan? It must have been quite a strange feeling because obviously, you know, we work in the media. We are used to getting our news 24/7 all the time. Were you completely cut off? Were you listening to were you going back in the old days, you know, a radio or via your mobile phones with the mobile network still working?
Some mobile networks still work. Some are still not back. Like I say, the internet has been down to most people, and it's slowly coming back. As I say, ours came back literally about 2 hours ago. Electricity is still out for about 6 million people, close to 8 million people if you count Georgia and South Carolina and North Carolina. They've got, you know, a million people without electricity in Georgia. But people understand this. People have been through this before on a smaller scale. But this just blanketed the entire state of Florida. I mean, we were talking, you know, one day they said if you were going to try to get out ahead of this, I mean, you'd have to go all the way up to Ohio.
The other thing is, as well, I mean, I've got a very good friend who lives in Miami. He was sending me pictures of the financial center of Miami, you know, big business center, Orlando, massive tourist center. You said the airports had been shut. The Florida Keys, again, a very popular tourist destination. What knock-on effect is this going to have on a local, you know, on the local economy and indeed, I mean, the U.S. economy in general? Because it's a big, Florida is an important state.
Oh, it is. And tourism, the mayor of Miami last week, or of Miami Beach, and again, what you look at and most people look at is Miami Beach. They look at the whole peninsula and consider that. Miami Beach is actually one of dozens of towns that go up the whole peninsula. But the mayor of Miami Beach was saying, I think it was last Thursday or something, he said, I never believed I'd say this, but get out of my town. He said it first to the tourists, and a day later he started saying it to the residents, because that is very low, and Miami Beach, the area that is technically Miami Beach, floods if they get a heavy rain normally. So they knew there was no chance this was not going to flood, and flood badly, and it has. The island we are on, the police are still out blocking the bridges, and if you don't live on the island, you can't come onto this island because there are areas beyond us. You go from the mainland across a causeway to one island, then our island, then onto the peninsula of Miami Beach. And the towns up and down Miami Beach in our area were hit hard enough that they are still declared off limits to anybody. One of the problems they're dealing with now is all the people who left, who of course now immediately want to come back. Some of the shelters, they actually have said, no, you may not leave the shelter yet, because they don't want people out in the streets. There are hundreds of trees down all over the place, and this is the mildest case. There are electric lines down all over the place. In many places, there's standing water, and you put hot electric wires in water. That's a bad, bad thing.
I mean, it's going to take a while, isn't it? Because, I mean, Rick Scott, the Florida governor, has said power lines are down throughout the states. We've got roads that are impassable. So everybody's got to be patient as we work through this. It's not just a question of, okay, the storm's over now, let everybody go home. You've got a huge amount, millions of displaced people.
That's right, you do, because so many, and this time people took it more seriously than they have before, and more people did evacuate, more people went to shelters than have in the past, which in many ways is good, but, I mean, they had trouble handling them all, but now you have the reverse problem of getting all of these people home, and of course, now that the storm is over, and Monday afternoon, the sun was out. It was a beautiful day. It was gone. And if you're sitting in a shelter and you're trapped in a high school gymnasium with 700 or 800 other people, the only thing you want to do at this point is leave. But they don't want them to leave yet, because they don't want all these people clogging the highways where you know, electrical workers are and so on are trying to put things back together, just the very basic infrastructure. So they're trying to keep people now from coming back, rushing back in large numbers, for fear that's going to create more problems than they've had already.
We're talking about Miami, we're talking about the states being hit, but obviously Irma cut a sway of the devastation through the Caribbean, and their response, and because the, you know, obviously we're talking about the states, it's developed, it's a technological nation, but seeing some of the pictures coming out of Cuba, coming out of Cayman has been hit very strongly, St. Bart's and St. Kitts, I mean, they really have were the first to hit by the storm. 95% of infrastructure or buildings being wiped out in some cases. Are you aware of that where you are, Nathan? And I'll come on to you, Rex, because you obviously know the area quite well.
Yeah, I'm aware of it, because we saw a little of that actually before we lost power here. And you were asking how we kept up with things. We had battery-powered radios. In fact, we had some of the really hand-cranked radios that you can get now that were developed for third world countries. But even without batteries, you sit there and you crank it and you get so much power to run the radio for a while. But what basically is, you have the old-fashioned battery-powered radios. And what happens here, and again, this is something that's been developed over years. The television stations will team up with radio stations, so you'll be getting the television audio on your radio, because the television stations are bigger than the radio stations. They have more reporters out. They have better information. They're more connected than the radio stations with the National Hurricane Service and all of that. So we were getting television audio from any of the television station you'd want, you know, just on a regular radio. So you had the communication, but of course you only get so much with that, and of course you're only getting the audio.
And I was just going to say, we've got reports coming in that Barbuda was, you know, Antigua and Barbuda, 95% of the buildings are damaged. The island is barely habitable. Rex, you know the area very well.
Well, I've travelled quite extensively through the Caribbean, Bahamas, Bermuda. But what saddens me is that, of course, most of the people living on those islands would not have been insured. I doubt whether, even if they had insurance, it would be adequate. And, of course, that leaves us all now to ponder who is going to pay for everything. In America, obviously, as Nathan will confirm, they've got the state budget and the national budgets, but Britain will definitely have to pick up the tab for our overseas protectorates and because it is our responsibility. Well, we've all dependencies, and they depend on us to mend their infrastructure when everything goes down.
I mean, we've already seen the British response to this, because HMS Ocean docked in Gibraltar yesterday on its way over to the Caribbean with aid. I think it was, there's 10 4x4s were given by the government of Gibraltar along with building supplies. And also Boris Johnson, is the Foreign Secretary, will be flying over to assess the damage himself firsthand. Everybody thinks of these idyllic Caribbean islands, but they forget that these are irregular currents hurricanes. And Jose has apparently been downgraded a little, because obviously they were looking at some of the images on satellite TV over the past couple of days. There seem to be three storms, hurricanes, heading down the same path, and you just feared for people already who've suffered tremendous damage to their infrastructure in the Caribbean, then being hit by another storm. You know, it really could be a killer blow.
Some of them were, and I saw just in the past hour or so some of the video from there and from the Florida Keys. And of course, the one thing about all of these places, the buildings, most of them are, you know, low-level, one-story houses and so on. And most of those places, much as they know that they get hit by hurricanes, they don't have the building standards that in Miami certainly are very, very strongly enforced, especially if you're building, you know, condominiums or office buildings or things like that. But every so often they upgrade them. After Hurricane Andrew, all of the, you know, the requirements for building change. But of course, the older the buildings, the weaker they are. And on a lot of these islands, those are very old buildings, and they were not built to a very high standard to begin with. So a devastating storm like this just really flattens everything.
We've got an email here at studio@talkradio.com. Dear Giles, when we lived abroad in the 1950s, we were told by the Foreign Office that should trouble erupt, we would be maybe evacuated, but priority would be given to their staff and documents, then service personnel, then if room, civilians. Civilians would be expected to get themselves to the departure points and wait. If they were evacuated, they'd be charged by the Home Office for the expense, which have to be repaid as a priority by the evacuees. Aid would be forthcoming if available, but not to imagine it would be available, and we would have to do the best we could, quote unquote. Sounds like nothing much has changed. Not very helpful as normal. When I inquired in the 1990s if the situation had changed, I was told no. Interesting, don't you think?
I think that's true. I don't care. It doesn't matter what country you deal with. I mean, you know, the governments, I don't know what their technical deals are with some of these. They're not colonies anymore. I don't know what they are, and I don't know what the British government or the French government is required to do with agreements they have with what were former colonies or so on. But basically, for expats, yes, if you go someplace else, it is not your government's responsibility, and they don't take that responsibility, and they announce this fairly openly. You want to do these things, fine, go do them, but don't come to us if you have a problem.
Nathan, the correct term, we don't have colonies anymore, really. It's a bit of an old-fashioned term, but I think they're dependencies. They're known as
former colonies.
Now they're known as dependencies, of which there are quite a few still. But I was reading an interesting piece the other day regarding Lloyd's underwriters and insurance. And, of course, the brunt will be felt at Lloyd's in London, and then onwards they pass that on to reinsurers in various parts of the world to soften the load. But what's ironic is that there is a silver lining for Lloyd's. They are prepared. They've already set aside monies for reparation, but they're rubbing their hands slightly, because it means that next year they can charge more. And because Lloyd's works on a voluntary basis, where you go in and you pledge money, which you're only called upon in the event of a disaster or a claim, the number of people who will be participating next year as a result of this year's disaster will diminish. So therefore, the premiums will go up considerably next year. I mean, it's not a very it's not a very pleasant thing to think about at this time of disaster, but for those who are insured, obviously they will be concerned that next year the premiums are going to really increase quite dramatically.
I'm amazed that you can even get insurance for hurricanes in places like Florida or Mexico. And I noticed that the new French president is on his way out to San Martin, which is 95% down and in desperate need of support. And he's had to leave behind all these hundreds of organizations or companies that are striking in France today. But so obviously he's taking responsibility, he and the Dutch, actually.
And we'll have to see what they end up doing and what they can do. And, of course, you know, part of the problem they have, like you say, there's a ship leaving Gibraltar to go to places over in the Caribbean. But you're talking about, you know, I don't know how long, but it's days, if not a week or more, before they'll get there.
The St. Martin is a fascinating island. It's literally got a white line painted down the middle. It reminds me of an old movie with Terry Thomas, Carlton Brown of the FO, or something like that. And it literally, you cross the line from the French side to the Dutch side, and the French side is all trim and manicured and beautiful, and you go to the Dutch side, it's a bit sort of rough and ready. But there, it's a fascinating island, and they, of course, took the brunt, a serious brunt, as did Barbuda.
And you're seeing some quite shocking pictures coming out of there of these you know, beach clubs. Richard Branson, of course, famously sat out the hurricane in Necker Island. St. Bart's is well known for its beach clubs. It's where the beautiful people go. We've got a caller on the line. Beautiful people, obviously. Rosley, are obviously a regular there. We've got a caller on the line. 952-784-4000 is the phone number. Studio at talkradio.com is the email. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Hello, Giles. Jason.
Morning, Jason.
Kick this thing off and maybe steer it in a slightly wider direction. This year, am I correct in saying the hottest temperature ever was recorded also? This year?
Yes.
Back-to-back storms. I think there seems to be an exponential change in the weather. But I think the climate change, whether it's natural or man-made at this point, is semantic. I think what's happened is we've passed a natural tipping point from which there is no return. And I think the things we've just seen, nature's force unleashed in the future, are going to get worse and worse and worse. What does the panel think about that?
We will come on to that subject. Thank you, Jason, for the call. Nature's tipping point from which there is no return after this.
Viewpoint
with Giles Brown.
You're listening to Viewpoint, Talk Radio's current affairs programme with a panel of invited guests. Joining me in the studio, Rex Leyland and Roslyn Scott-Gibb. And on the line, in a storm-battered, or a hurricane-battered Miami, is Nathan Thomas. 952-784-4000, the phone number. Studio at talkradioeurope.com is the email. The Facebook page, should you wish to leave a viewpoint, is Talk Radio Europe Official. Jason called in, Nathan, just saying, is this the tipping point? Mother Nature's forces unveiled. We've seen massive fires in California as well over the past couple of days. There's been flooding, I believe, in Bangladesh, an earthquake in Mexico, though that's, you can argue that's not really climate change. You have a president who is denying climate change actually exists. I know it's early days and it might be a bit left field, but has there been any reaction from people in the States saying, you know, we told you so, we told you this would happen, it's climate change in its effect? We've got a caller on the line, actually, so we're just going to take the caller first and come to you, Nathan. Good morning, you're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please? Hello, no, and as the saying goes, there they were gone. Nathan, any protest groups saying this is a direct result of the climate change phenomenon?
I'm sure there will be, and again, I've been pretty much out of touch since this storm, you know, came ashore in Miami on Saturday, so I haven't heard that. But in the lead up to it, people were talking about just the size and this storm and the one in Houston and the fires. And yeah, people who are convinced that climate change is real say this is an example of what is happening, and those who deny it. And the White House has said, well, it's too early to really connect these storms to climate change. I don't know that this is really going to convince anybody who believes one way or the other. I mean, the scientific evidence is there that the climate is changing. I don't think anybody questions that. The question that people throw up is it because of man, or is it because this is something just the natural way of things and it would happen no matter what humanity does? I think a lot of people believe that, you know, humanity is probably speeding along the natural process. But whether this will actually make any changes in anybody's viewpoint or the action of anybody, and particularly, of course, we're talking about the U.S. government, who is pulling back on programs that had been in place before, whether that will, these storms will be a convincing thing for Mr. Trump, President Trump, and his administration. You're right, it's too early to tell, but it is, you know, no question, major changes in nature and the nature of storms and the size of them and the frequency, no question it's happening, but the argument will, I think, continue about why this is happening. One thing I wanted to also mention, Rosalind mentioned the insurance, and you can get insurance in Florida. It's not outrageously expensive, but this is because of state and federal mandates that the insurance companies have to make it available and can't, you know, price gouge, et cetera, et cetera. So many people have it. It is obviously more expensive than it is in places that don't risk being hit by a tornado or by a hurricane, you know, fairly regularly. So, but it does exist. How many people have it, I don't know. But they're talking between this and Hurricane Harvey, the one that hit Houston, of damages, and this is not insurance, but just the damages that somebody is going to have to pay for, or that they will lose, of 100 to 125 billion with a B dollars.
And we've got we've got a caller on the line. Just one second, Rosalind. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Oh, it's John from Islington.
Morning, John.
Just to say, on the reparations for all the Caribbean islands, the vast majority of which are tax havens, maybe we should just have an 8% or 0.25% one-off tax and on all the funds that are hidden out there, corporate and personal, and the repatriation will be able to be done fairly swiftly. That's a bit tongue-in-cheek, by the way, but never mind.
Thank you for your call-in. Rosalind, let's go to your point, please.
Good luck on that one. Yes, apparently the amount, I was surprised, is the same as it cost for Katrina, which I would have thought would be much more, were that, you know, that much further down the line, but it's the same, apparently, the quoted amount it's going to cost.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, you know, these are all estimates at this point. I mean, in a lot of places, well, in the Carolinas and Georgia, it's just happening right at this minute. So they don't know how bad that's going to be, but they know it's bad. For Florida, I mean, they, you know, I don't know how you add up the damage this quickly. Those are estimates. I mean, they may come out to be way under. They could be over, but probably not, because the damage has been just what we've seen so far has been immense. So we'll just have to wait and see. But those are the figures that are kind of being tossed around at this very early stage.
And you would have to say as well, the response by President Trump has been very presidential. A lot of people were saying before, you know, the Hurricane Harvey cleanup, that, you know, this would be, again, a litmus test of his presidency, how he reacted to them. He seems to have his response to these sort of events, these seem to play very well for him. He seems to be able to play to the gallery or respond in a presidential manner, Nathan.
Well, he did with Harvey. I mean, I haven't. Again, I've been way out of touch. We've been in the middle of a storm, sitting in a basically blacked out room with candles, and, you know, for the past 3 days. So I don't know. I don't know whether he's planned a trip to Florida yet. I don't know what he would do here if he came, other than see the damage. But Yeah, he hasn't done, I don't think, anything badly as far as a reaction so far. I think one thing that works to his advantage after the problems that FEMA has had in the past, I think they have much more gotten their act together so that they're doing things that he really doesn't have a whole lot to do with. It's just that agency knows what to do. People were pre-positioned down here. They are so used to hurricanes. I mean, Florida Power and Light, which is the major electric company throughout Florida, just in the Miami area, they had 19,000 electrical workers pre-positioned before the storm hit, ready to start replacing transformers and reconnecting wires and everything as soon as you know, the storm was over, which would have been Monday morning. And, you know, within a few hours, I know the place where we are and some other places, I don't know how widespread this is, but we had electricity back in, you know, about 6 or 7 hours. But for some places, they say it's going to be weeks.
And we've got a caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What's your viewpoint, please?
Good morning, Giles. It's Peter.
Morning, Peter.
Climate change. I keep hearing people say about the worst weather ever, and I think Nathan said it's a fact, a scientific fact. If you look up scientific fact, it's not a fact, it's a theory. So, and it always amazes me how much self-importance man, I mean that term collectively, has on its effect on the planet. If you look at weather records, we go back less than 100 years, reliable ones, less than 100 years. The planet's been here, let's say, between 5 and 7 billion years. So worst weather ever, I don't think so. And I don't know if that includes the wiping out of the dinosaurs and the moving of the tectonic plates and the
occasional ice age.
So, yeah.
A lot of records from back then either is a problem.
Well, exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying. There's no evidence. Now, as far as climate change goes, if we are in climate change, how do we not know that the planet doesn't go through seasons? How do we know it doesn't have a million year seasons? Maybe a spring, an autumn, a winter, and a summer, or a billion years, or a trillion years. So I think for us to sit there and think that we have an effect on the weather and whether we even know what the weather's doing is diabolical. The fact that we've only been here 150,000 years out of several billion, I can only suggest that it is a con, and I think most people know that. It doesn't help the people who have been affected by it, but as far as the weather's concerned, we know absolutely nothing, and you can't beat Mother Nature. So that's all I've got to say on it, really.
Thank you for that, Peter. We are in the world goes through seasons. This means we may be approaching autumn, and winter is coming. Rex, your thoughts?
Well, this whole recent continual tragedies overtaking all of us. One has to think, if one is religious, is God angry? What have we done wrong? But of course, that is really not the point. The point is that these weather patterns are probably cyclical, and we're going through a particular pattern at this time. I think also what's, as well as all the hurricanes this side of the world, we're also forgetting in Asia that they've had probably one of the worst monsoons ever, the most rainfall, the most disruption, the most number of deaths. So it's not just isolated.
And we've got a caller on the line again. Good morning, caller. You're live on TRE. What's your name? Where are you calling from? What is your viewpoint, please?
Yeah, it's Jason again. I was a bit early before with my point. I believe that obviously we've had an effect on this planet, all the chemtrails and chemicals that been put into the atmosphere attempts to control the weather as well. Anybody that would think that's not the case has probably been living in Emmerdale Farm or Coronation Street. We have affected our climate, but it's not just the weather, is it? If the sea levels rise as they predict, which is probably likely, what people don't realise is a lot of that is the ice shelf, fresh water. When fresh water enters the sea, somebody says you're going to get your feet wet, you have to move to higher ground. But the problem is, if somebody says that the oxygen starts to deplete on the planet and the planet's life support begins to fail, then people start to worry. And the reason this could happen is the same way that coral's starting to die, is the organism that makes the air that we breathe is in the sea. and it's taken 300 or millions of years to evolve, and it cannot just adapt to unfavourable living conditions. So for people that think we haven't affected this planet and the way we've trashed it and polluted it and the blind indifference we've got towards nature, then they're the ones that's dreaming. And if we carry on the way we are, probably too late now anyway, at some point the planet's life support will fail. And that's not me scaremongering, because there's only so much damage a system can absorb.
Jason, thanks for your call in.
Viewpoint with Giles Brown.
Well, we are live from the studios of TRE Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain. Time is 4 minutes to the top of the hour. We'll have international news and then Spanish and local news at 11 o'clock with you live until 12 o'clock. 952-78-4000, the phone number. Studio at talkradioeurope.com is the email, and the Facebook page, Talk Radio Europe Official. Just having a quick look, as I often do during the show, at President Trump's Twitter feed, because it is the source of some interesting information. What was interesting to see was he gave out solid information in the run-up. He has been criticised before for perhaps making political points, making strange comments on his internet feed. We have debated that at length on this show, but you would have to say that he did actually get the information out there with going live to storm warnings, what the governor of Florida was saying. Indeed, we haven't heard anything, Nathan. I don't know if you would know either, because obviously the Winter White House was on the Mar-a-Lago, was on the path the hurricane, and I haven't seen anything about that as well. Would you know anything about how, if the Winter White House was buffeted by the storms?
It certainly was buffeted. I don't think there's any question about that. How badly it was damaged, I don't know, because I haven't heard anything about it. Like I say, it's been very interesting just totally being for 3 days out of touch, especially off the internet. And even today, as I'm trying to make flight arrangements and so on, you suddenly realize how much we do depend on that. And when it's not there, it really comes as a shock. I mean, the electricity, fine, you can light candles, you can do this, but it's the contact with basically the outside world that you suddenly realize how much you depend on that just for the normal activities of daily life in 2017.
But Nathan, remember when we didn't have that and we still existed quite happily. But
yes, we did. But the problem is when you're the one without it and everybody else has it and is doing business that way, you're stuck.
Has it been cathartic for the last three days have it?
Well, like I say, it's been very interesting. You're so busy and you're so, you know, into the storm that is howling, screaming around you, and you're in there making sure you, you know, survive the thing. And it really is a scary, loud, amazing situation. And I've been through this in different places some other times, but usually it's been working as a journalist. This time I was just kind of here as a person not having any job to do or anything with it. But just the idea of, yes, you can get along, you can pull in the water, you can have food there and so on. But
no doubt you caught up with your reading, Nathan. What was on your reading list?
Well, yes, I mean, you had time to do that. Actually took a lot of naps because, again, you don't want to waste the batteries in your flashlights doing a lot of things because you really don't know how long it's going to last. I mean, for some people, this, you know, not having electricity and so on will go on for weeks. We were, in many ways, very lucky here because it has cleaned up fast because the storm was a lot more to the west than they'd originally predicted, so we weren't hurt as badly as they said. But, you know, it is an amazing situation that you realize you can certainly survive yourself. You're not going to necessarily have to be rescued. You don't have to depend on the government to do anything. You've got your food, your water, and whatever. But what you really realize is because you still have to participate in the outside world, it was how do I make my plane reservations if the phone doesn't work and if the internet doesn't work? How do I know if the flight... I may hear on the radio that flights are going again, but how do I know about mine if I have no way to contact anyone?
Yes, it's good. Yes, the thing that I've always found is when you're in these situations or where you're in an emergency situation, it's the old phones, the old mobiles you always take out. I've got an old Nokia from I think it's 1990 whatever that will run. Rex is waving his at me now that runs for about 5 days on a single charge, and those sorts of things are always come in useful during this time.
Oh, yeah.
Nathan, what did you eat?
We had all kinds of food. And again, if you bring in things that, you know, aren't going to spoil because you're going to lose refrigeration after about 48 hours, the refrigerator and the freezer, had all the ice cream out of the freezer.
Back to canned food, no doubt.
Yeah, yes, what? Exactly. And I mean, some people that, you know, were in the building here were cooking with Sterno. People get very creative when you have a lot of time with nothing to do but worry about where am I going to, you know, what are we going to eat next?
That's basically how most of the good restaurants started, Nathan. Right, international news and national news at the top of the hour, and then back for more Viewpoints. Stay tuned.